Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing energies, and higher consciousness to know yourself and life in its miraculous and ever-changing ways. Today I welcome a former guest of the show, Arjuna Arge, co-author with John Gray, a leading relationship expert and author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, to discuss their newest book, Conscious Men, which hopes to guide men to look within and discover their purpose and mission, to be in touch with feelings but not ruled by feelings, and to also follow his own path and destiny. Hello, Arjuna, and thank you for joining me once again to share your wisdom and passion for exploring our highest human potential as both men and women.
Thank you, Cheryl. Very nice to hear your voice again.
And yours also. I always, if you remember, love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember some value or interest that may have blossomed in adulthood, but actually began almost at the beginning of life for them and has led them so far now into the life they live now. So think back for a moment.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I remember, Cheryl, thank you for the question. That's a very nice question that you're asking. So I remember when I was a child, I used to go on holiday in the summertime to a village called Walberswick, which was on the east coast of England in Suffolk. And people who were also children then, they remember that we used to meet on the village green. You know, the children would meet on the village green with their bicycles. So everybody, after breakfast, everybody would go to the village green to meet with their bicycles. And people to this day remember that I was always the one who showed up with some crazy adventure that I had in mind. You know,
how cute.
Let's go to the haunted house, or let's ride our bicycles to the brewery, or I always wanted to go somewhere very, you know, exotic, and I had to persuade everybody to join my crazy idea. And I think in a way that's been my life, you know, that I continue to come up with crazy ideas and then invite other people to join.
Not so crazy, actually. Curious and adventuresome, and what we're here on this planet to do, to explore and know ourselves better. And the only way we can do that is by experience. That's great. How did you come to meet and work with John Gray? And why did you both feel that men needed a new way to evaluate their roles as fathers and sons, husbands and friends in this new changing world today?
Well, you know, I've known John Gray since 1977. So that's, I think that's about 30 years. I can't quite calculate. Yeah, 1977.
Long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've known John Gray all that time. And, but about 8 years ago, we came into the same men's group together.
Oh.
And so what happened is I was one day I was going to the men's group and I was quite tired, you know, I felt very fatigued, so I didn't want to drive all the way home. I decided I would like to stay in the, you know, where the men's group was. And so I texted everybody in the men's group. I sent I sent an email and said, does somebody have a place for me to stay? And I got an email back from John Gray saying, yes, you can stay with me. So I went to stay with John Gray, and we went to the men's group together, and then we came back, and when we got back to his house, he said, would you like a cup of tea? And I said, sure. And so we had a cup of tea, and we started to talk about our men's group, but then we moved on to talking about men's groups in general, and then we started to talk about men and what it means to be a man. So we had a lot of talk about this, and it was a great talk. And the next month I also needed a place to stay, so I contacted him again and said, could I stay with you again? And he said okay. And then the next time I went to stay with him, I said, well, look, we're having these great conversations about men. What do you think if we record it? And he said, yeah, that's okay. So we started to record it, and I got those recordings transcribed, and that really then turned into a book.
Very interesting. And I know you also discussed conscious Dharma at work and how this book would help people understand that concept, because whether we're a man or a woman, we're living a process of change. So tell us something about karma, conscious Dharma at work.
Yeah, so, you know, the word Dharma, it actually is a word from India. And it used to mean your duty, your place in the world. But in these old cultures, your place in the world was determined really by your birth, by what your father did before you. So you could feel quite secure about your place in the world. There was no mystery, because if your father was a craftsman, you would be a craftsman. If your father was a teacher, you would be a teacher. You would do what your father did because it was your place in the world. Now, in a way, that was very restrictive, but it was also very secure, because you didn't have to worry about what your role was. You knew it from what your father did before you. Well, today, people don't live like that anymore. If you work hard at school, just about anybody can get a scholarship to do anything. You don't have to be rich to get an education anymore.
Well, let me break in here for a minute to say, in the United States, we're in the middle of an election right now, a presidential election. And it's the 2016 election that's going to happen in November. And
I'm just joking. I'm just joking, because I don't think anyone could possibly not know that yet.
Okay. Well, anyhow, we had President Bush, and then we had his son, so that shows Dharma at work. And now we have Hillary Clinton and her husband, and he was president about 30 years ago, and now she's running. And so it still might be viable in some areas of life for some people, even though we hope our children have opportunities to find what it is they were born to do, and it doesn't necessarily have to be what their parents or what our society expects from them. So I think what you were saying is absolutely correct. And when I see things and people being forced or encouraged into areas that maybe they're not even best suited for, because the class structure or society demands it or expects it, I say that's not the change that we expect to happen in the 21st century. So
totally. Yeah, that's right.
But in talking about conscious Dharma, you say that you first become aware of the unconscious forces that influence you, like what did your father and mother expect of you, where did you feel obligated by your education, and so on like that. And you give some examples of people like conformist Colin and greedy George. Can you tell us any of those types of experiences that we're dealing with, that people are dealing with?
Yeah, sure. Well, let me go back a minute, Cheryl, to something that we didn't quite complete before.
Okay.
Just when you started to talk about the election, I was just completing saying something that, you know, previously a man would follow what his father had done. But now, of course, people don't want to be restricted in that way. And so, in a way, that creates an incredible freedom. That anyone with an academic opportunity, anyone with academic, you know, who could work hard, can get opportunity. But it also creates an incredible dilemma for people today, because you don't know what to do because it's what your father did. So it creates this question, which can actually be it's a question that can provoke a lot of anxiety, possibly. Of what is my purpose, you know, and this is a new question. It's not a question that we have worked with before. What is my purpose? You see, what am I here to accomplish? And that's really the dilemma for men today, is to discover what is my purpose.
And how do you suggest that they go about looking deep within themselves to find what it is truly that is important, the values, and how to create a life of positivity, perhaps, if they can determine that?
Yeah. Well, the kind of criteria really is it's transcending a polarity, because it used to be, the polarity used to be either I do what's expected of me by my birth, or I do what I feel like doing. And either way doesn't really work. If you do what was expected from your birth, you feel restricted. If you do what you feel like doing, you feel you become too much influenced by fleeting emotion. So the middle ground is to be able to recognize the right thing, to be able to recognize just the right thing which brings the best result for everybody.
Go on, and how would you describe a conscious man?
Well, I think a conscious man, Cheryl, is a man who is no longer living on automation, but his automation has become art. Now, art is a very interesting thing. You see, if you think about theater, cinema, or art itself, paintings, very often it's taking something which would happen anyway, but by representing it consciously, it becomes beautiful. So I'll give you an example. Like somebody very angry or very sad, in real life that's sort of unpleasant, but if you watch a movie in which an actor or an actress really skillfully portrays somebody angry or sad, it becomes beautiful. The difference is it's been made into art. It's been consciously delivered as an art form. And anything like that, anything that is given consciously as art, becomes beautiful. And so actually a conscious man is one who is no longer living his masculinity as automation, but who has transformed his masculinity into an art form.
So also a conscious man is aware of his own personal inner dreams and destiny and goals and values, and he creates or manifests, like an art form, what is important in his own self-growth and development, and refines his emotions and behaviors to reflect his own thinking, not that of society or his family or ancestral karma. So it is beautiful. That is going within, and that is going to create something new in these times rather than living in the past. And that's what we were born to do, I believe, to dig within ourselves and remember the beauty and the wisdom of forever, eternity, and bring it into the world for our well-being, for our growth, for our joy, and for also making the world a better place. So that's very, 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 very beautiful. And you know, women are becoming aware of this energy and intuition and self-development and the creation of all it is that they want to be, not what they were told to be. So this is happening pretty much throughout the civilized world, I'm going to say. Of course, in societies that are primitive, they have not reached this kind of understanding yet. Now, I'd like to read this, Arjuna, because you write this in your description of a conscious man. A conscious man is one who is aware of his natural character and can recognize the way he was born. He is aware of his true nature and has no reason to suppress it. He is also conscious of the different kinds of conditioning that have influenced him, and this awareness also gives him the possibility of conscious choice. His masculinity has become something like a work of art, a conscious gift to the world that allows him to be fully himself. That's very, very exciting, because the word conscious choice is very important for our listeners, and it's not only for men, it's for women too. We all have conscious choice. And how might men or women, still vibrating to the old role models of behavior, get into this new paradigm? How can they move into this new understanding that we're talking about and make it part of their reality, not just part of their thoughts, but part of their reality?
Well, I think, you know, the answer to that question really, Cheryl, is what we call practice, you know, conscious practice. Conscious practice really means to do something deliberately that breaks up the automation. So we, in our book, we have just tons and tons and tons of practices that people can try, which bring more awareness and art to masculinity. So that's really the answer to the question, is conscious, deliberate practice.
All right. You also mentioned, in response to this redefining of gender roles that have been established for men and women, men have fallen into a variety of different responses.
And yeah, that's right, yeah.
Can you tell us something about some of the responses men have had in the past to hold on, perhaps, to what they thought was expected, and what just some of those gender roles, redefining of them?
Yes, sure, Cheryl, absolutely. So, so you know, women have really transformed their role in society enormously. Women have dramatically changed their role in society in the last 100 years. But you know, so 100 years goes back to the emancipation and the post. But women have, there have been different phases. Women also transformed their role in society enormously in the late 60s and 70s. When women demanded equal pay for the same work, you know, the women started to want to do the kind of roles, to perform the kind of roles that men had traditionally performed, like in the military or in being a lawyer or doctor or judge. And so while there's been a huge shift initiated by women in the redefining of gender roles, men have not initiated this so much. They've had to respond to it. You know, men have had to, to find a response to the emergence of the feminine, but they've not necessarily initiated it.
Absolutely, yes, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Was started one response, with the women, yeah.
Yeah, one response would be to dig in and hold on to traditional macho values. That would mean to basically, that's the man who really disdains and dislikes feminism, who sees feminists as, you know, the enemy. And that's a man who really wants to hold on to traditional macho roles. A second response would be the feminization of a man who becomes weak, who really starts to feel ashamed of his masculinity and who defers to the feminine and really makes the feminine superior. So that's the feminized man. The third kind of reaction would be a sort of cultivated, imitative masculinity, where you get the idea of what a conscious man should look like and you start to behave deliberately in that way. And then a fourth possibility would be what we're talking about here, which is that you abandon any rules of what a man should be like and you simply find a way to turn your, what would otherwise be automatic, into art. And that's really what our book is about, is the transformation of automation.
Well, yeah, it seems to me that the first three are not going to work too well, and the fourth possibility is what will take us forward, and people will not be a slave to biology. They'll become more aware of the balance between male and female energy, which we all have. We all have this within us, and understanding it is the key to the future and the changes. So, you know, this is also true of a conscious woman who is aware of energy, an expression of all their interests, uniqueness, and talents, and a failure to be categorized by her role as merely a wife and mother. So it is necessary at this time of evolution, spiritual evolution, and becoming more aware of how to help our planet survive through all the traumas, all the conditions that are happening worldwide. So we have to become conscious citizens of the universe. There's no choice but to go in this direction. You know, in my book, The Living Spirit, I address the differences between men and women, which I'm going to ask you about in a minute, as a stepping stone to understanding men and women. Their unique energies affect their awareness and communication in the following way, and I wrote, the divine source encompasses both the masculine and the feminine, hence the terms Father God and Mother Earth. Men and women are the human manifestations of these male and female energies. But while it is true that we are all aspects of Source, it is also true that men and women exhibit different energies, interests, hormonal structures, needs, and obligations. And in addition, each of us has male and female energies in varying degrees. We must utilize both energies to become well-functioning individuals and recognize the qualities, whether male or female, of others. So this is what we're talking about today. The possibilities for all of us to grow immensely and quickly. It doesn't have to be such a slow progression at this point. We have everything we need to do this. So in the book, you talk about men and women and about the words masculine and feminine and say they do not mean the same things, and they don't. So can you explain that?
Sure. Well, men, the words men and women, there's really a biological difference, which I think everybody understands. So a man has a flat chest and a penis and facial hair. That's what a man means. And a woman means, you know, breasts and a vagina and capable of bearing children and menstrual cycle. So these are physical differences which are very clear for 1,999 people out of 2,000. What about one in 2,000 has physical sexual ambiguity? And that's important to honor that and respect that as well. So, but both men and women actually have access to two kinds of energies, which run in all of us, masculine and feminine. Masculine energy is mostly recognized to be directional, to be focused, to be pointed, to be centered, to be on track.
Yes.
Feminine energy is more flowing, more accommodating, more yielding. So these two energies, the focused, penetrating masculine, the yielding, flowing feminine, we all have both of them. And it's really for each man and each woman to find the right balance of those two energies that is going to make them and everybody else happy.
Yeah, happiness is definitely a goal, but it's not the main goal for having a physical life. I think the main goal is to find your purpose, as we started to say at the beginning of this show, to find your purpose and to find your way, why you were born in the first place, and to achieve your destiny and fulfill yourself. So, yeah, happiness comes as a result of that, but it's not the main thing that we should be striving for. Now, how will conscious men and women deal with so much unrest in the world, like what we're dealing right now with radical Islamist terrorists, who I don't believe are the conscious men we're talking about here? How are we going to, as we evolve, bring others along?
Well, I think one thing that's important is not to set one ideology against another, you know. No, I mean, yes, now we are contending with radical Islamic terrorism, but any kind of radical anything, you know, is going to be problematic. Now, one of the biggest cases of domestic terrorism in this country was in Oklahoma City, I believe it was, you know, where there was that.
Yes, I remember
bomb.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was a radical Christian extremist, you see. So there's no,
yes.
I mean, what we need to guard ourselves against is radical extremist anything, not just Islam. There's nothing wrong with Islam. There are plenty of, I've met plenty of very good people in life who have Islam as their religion. There's nothing wrong with Islam. There's nothing wrong with Christianity. There's nothing wrong with Hinduism. It's the radical extremism that is the problem, not Islam itself. So radical extremism of any kind means that we place belief as more important than love, you see. When you're in your heart experiencing love, you feel compassion, you feel empathy, you can understand how other people feel. When you're glued to a belief, the belief actually cuts you off from feeling, and the belief then causes you to act in crazy ways. Now, why do people have such strong beliefs? Because they are missing meaning and purpose. You see, people have strong beliefs because they have lost their natural place in the world. What I've noticed for me, you know, I'm nearly 60 years old, and every year that goes by, I believe I have less and less beliefs and less rigid opinions about anything. It's like, you know, so as I get older, whatever opinion I can come up with, I would say the opposite is also true. I find myself less glued to beliefs and more open to many different perspectives on each situation.
Yes, thank you very much for that. And that is the way it should be. As you grow in greater love, you also grow in losing a lot of these opinions and beliefs that can hurt yourself or others. And I think that is the way you just expressed, how to go and help others by our example, being mm-hmm. conscious citizens, and hopefully they will see the value of it. And eventually, as you said, any radical belief cannot do any good in the world. It just can't.
Yeah.
Because it's out of sync with the way the flow of everyone else is going. So thank you very, very, very much for that. Now, we know this book is not just for men. And do you think many women are looking for conscious men also? How can women support their partner to bring forth qualities of a conscious man?
That's the most common question we get that John and I have both heard from women is, where can I find a conscious man? And then for a woman who is already in a relationship, how can I bring out best in my partner? These are the common questions. So women are incredibly interested in conscious men, absolutely, hugely interested in conscious men. Women have a great interest in that. And a woman really wants to know, how can I recognize a man who is really centered in himself? And if my man is not quite like that, how can I bring the best out of him? And our book addresses that. You know, every part of the book has a section called For Women that addresses exactly that.
Good. And so I can say, yes, women are looking for conscious men who can be authentic, happy, and true to their own needs and resonate with their own heart and their conscious dharma or integration of masculine and feminine energies. Absolutely. Women need it, and men need that in a woman too. Actually, to have a good relationship, we all have to reach the best level of ourself. I want to thank you, Arjuna Arj Kawatha, with John Gray of Conscious Men, which shares a view of both men and women of today who want to experience a multidimensional, fulfilled life, merging jobs, careers, and family life to create happy, satisfying relationships that afford them new ways to experience balance and well-being through appreciation of self and our individual uniqueness. To purchase this book, go to arjunaarj.com or marsvenus.com. Is that correct, Arjuna?
Actually, no. The best thing is consciousmen.com. There is a website called consciousmen.com, C-O-N-S-C-I-O-U-S, consciousmen.com, and that has a free 5-day mini course you can take that will introduce you in more depth to everything we're talking about today. Consciousmen.com would be the best.
Thank you very much for that. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have attempted to understand the need for greater intimacy in relationships while addressing the need for men and women to reduce stress by understanding their different biological needs and working with that awareness so that each may fulfill their personal, professional, and family obligations and create joyous living. Arjuna wrote, "Whenever a man takes space, it is a movement in the direction of returning to his true nature as limitless space. That has been the quest of yogis and mystics throughout history. A man may not be conscious of his drive for the infinite, but when he comes home and seeks to forget the problems of the day, his woman might ask him, 'What are you thinking?' He replies, 'Nothing.' These periods of blankness or emptiness when he is not on his mission or relating to anyone are extremely important. For women, they experience a return to their true nature as a movement in the direction of pure love. When a woman is able to share and express feelings without restriction, she feels more connected to a vaster, mystical, and unconditional love. Ultimately, the pursuit of infinite spaciousness is also a return to love. but the pathway up the mountain is quite different for a man and woman's nervous systems. The authors of Conscious Men and I would have you know that no matter the differences in our biological, emotional, and hormonal systems, men and women wish to explore within their own subconscious memories and the world environment the need to grow and relate to each other and all that is, in the greatest sense of love, compassion, mission, purpose, and oneness. It is in the best interest of life and its longing for wisdom to allow, accept, and surrender to what is natural and positive in our spiritual and physical worlds, and to be truly mindful, conscious, and awakened if we are to reach our divine human potential. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to hear about and listen to the authors in many fields relating to personal growth, health, and enlightenment. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.